Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Okay, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I am your host, Coach Rob, and I've got a great show for you today. A little bit different show than I typically would do, but it's been a little while since the last podcast, and I've been in a little bit of a retrospective mood since the racing season for me has kind of ended. And fall is setting in. Fall is actually one of my favorite months to ride, and it somehow makes me a little bit nostalgic, if you will. So, first thing I want to do before I get into the topic of today's podcast, which is the lost art of the group ride, is to go through a little bit of introduction and a little thank you to my sponsors. Number one, I want to thank RoadID. RoadID. They speak for you when you're unable to. So if you go out training or rioting or whatever and the worst happens and somebody finds your carcass laying in the gutter, they'll at least be able to inform your family as to where you're going. So that's a good, good thing. A lot of people are commenting on the benefits of a RoadID. A couple of my friends actually are EMTs and they've commented on what a good idea it actually is. Also, I want to thank the Sufferfest. Dave McQuellen down there in Australia just released the Elements of Style, a video which will be designed to help you smooth out your pedal stroke, work on the important things in your pedal stroke, etc., etc. And and that is available from thesufferfest.com. There's a link on the website. You can go click through to that. Sounds odd recommending training videos, but interestingly enough, those videos seem to mesh very, very nicely in my training plans if you choose to use those. Also want to thank U.S. Wellness Meats for hormone-free, junk-free, antibiotic-free, just plain old natural meat. Good old protein for building all the muscles you're building in the gym. Hopefully you're in the gym building muscles at this time if you are in the Northeast. If you're not, go listen to my podcast about that. It's important. I want to thank the Bulletproof Exec for some nifty little biohacking gizmos, which will help you get the most out of your training. And I also want to thank Amazon. I've got on that sponsor link on the website there. You can go to my Amazon recommended store and pick up a few goodies on there that your local bike shop may or may not have. And of course, you can always help to support the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Remember, I do not get paid for doing the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. My sponsor dollars go directly to bandwidth allocation and server space and web hosting and things like that. So I love providing this information to as many people as I can possibly provide it to. And my sponsors, they contribute, they throw a few ducats my way, a few shekels when somebody purchases something through my affiliate links. And that's how I help to offset the cost of bandwidth and everything to bring you free good information. Speaking of the sponsor links, the website, my online coaching store with my training plans and my high-intensity trainer workouts, the blog, and my show notes, episode show notes, receptacle for the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, is located at tailwind-coaching.com. On that website, there are plenty of links for how to get a hold of me, be it Twitter, be it the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, be it direct email, coachrobdc@gmail.com, be it Strava, or any number of other things out there, LinkedIn, Blueberry, Podbean, etc., etc. Head on over to the website and check it out, tailwind-coaching.com. And while you're over on the website checking out the show notes for this show, Do me a favor. There's a link over there. Head on over to iTunes and rate this podcast. Rate it 5 stars. The more stars I get, the more people I can get the information out to. The more people I can get the information out to, the more people actually get to enjoy being better riders. And there is nothing better than that, is having better riders out there. I love that when that happens. And, of course, loyal listeners of the podcast will know, if you head on over to tailwind-coaching.com and you hit the online training store with the training plans, my modular training plans are actually very popular at this point, and the training plan support option is doing really, really, really well right now. People are really very happy with that. don't forget to use the podcast10, podcast10 discount code at checkout. That'll knock 10% off of any and all of your purchases. Remember those training plans that are available. I just mentioned the modular training plans a few minutes ago. for those of you in the Northeast, actually in the United States for the most part, racing season is done. Cyclocross is already well and truly underway. So it's time to start thinking about next year. Never too early to plan for next year. So keep an eye out. Check out those modular plans. If you have questions or are looking for a consult, shoot me an email at coachrobdc@gmail.com. I have completed all the consults I had in queue, and I've still got a couple spaces for one-on-one training if that's what you're looking for. And I have quite a few spaces for training plan support if that's what you're looking for. So keep that in mind. All right. One thing that I want to do here before I really get started, I want to go over a couple of the news items that have been out there since my last podcast, because one of them is just a really sad news item, and one of them just kind of annoyed me a little bit. So I'm going to go into that in just a moment here. Okay, news items. First thing I want to get into, and this is kind of something, well, it's something that's just really, really a sad commentary on the state of women's cycling at this point in time, is I guess we're calling it Nude Kit Gate, or the Colombian female cycling team, which is competing in Europe, and they have a kit which is, well, let's put it this way. It looks like they're not wearing any pants. They're wearing like a crop top jersey and really kind of no pants. it's interesting. If you look at the actual kit in different images, the color is kind of an ochre color. It's supposedly the color of one of their sponsors. But that kit, like I said, it almost looks like these women are not wearing any pants, and it garnered a lot of international attention. So much so that I've heard from a couple of places that when the story broke, the vote for Scottish independence was going on, and this particular photo or story on BBC News got more hits than the vote for Scottish independence, which is ridiculous. I mean, it's just utterly ridiculous. having listened to Speed Metal Cycling, and having known the guy from Cycling Inquisition had talked to some of the media about that and some of the people from the team, it's really, really interesting to note that that team has been racing with that kit since about February of this year, and this is the first they've had a problem with it. And I don't know where it came from. I know it started out on Twitter, but it just got picked up and was really kind of ridiculous. The thing that annoys me about this is the fact that people picked up on this just sort of bothers me from a standpoint where this is what it takes for women's cycling to get noticed. Think about that for a second. Just think about that. It takes naked women on a kit, or naked women in a cycling kit, to actually draw interest in women's cycling. That's ridiculous. I'm giving you a moment to think about how stupid that actually is. All right. Women's cycling, I've heard from a number of places, people people don't like it because it's boring. The women aren't as strong. If you look at the world championships, which I'll talk about here in a little bit, if you look at the world championships, the women's race was boring until the last few, you know, last lap or so. Well, great. So was the men's race. And honestly, I have watched a lot of, I've watched a lot of women's racing. The team that I ride for actually sponsors a fairly prolifically winning women's team. And, honestly, they're all great people. And I'm not even going to say great ladies or great women. They're great people. All right. And they're just awesome bike racers. So just because they're not physically maybe as fast as a Mark Cavendish does not mean that women's racing is not awesome to watch. People who are saying that it's not great to watch have got to be watching really, really boring races. I'll be perfectly honest with you, because most of the most of the races that I've seen are really quite exciting, and there's a lot of strategy involved. Granted, women's racing in Europe is a little bit tough because Marianne Vos seems to win everything. But you know what? That's not kind of the case here in the United States. So the fact that it takes nude cyclists to get people interested in women's racing is just shameful. I mean, it's utterly and completely shameful. The fact that this is put alongside the fact that Specialized Lululemon, who's losing both of their sponsors, set up a crowdfunding source to try and get enough money to keep the team afloat, which they did. And they raised $100,000 in crowdfunding. Okay. That's, granted, nothing near their $800,000 goal, but they raised a lot of money. And that shows that there's interest in women's cycling. But it takes naked women, or supposedly naked women, to get most people to actually give a shit about women's racing. And that just pisses me off. All right? Women's racing is fucking awesome, guys. And I'm directing this to the guys out there. You know what? Go and watch some of the National Criterium Championship Series. Okay, go and watch some of the women's racing in the United States. It's incredible stuff. Watch even local women's racing where you have a decent field turnout. I'm not talking about you have three or four people. I'm talking about turnouts where you have 20 or 25 riders. All right, there's some actual good racing going on there, guys. And you know what? The male chauvinism of this sport is going to do nothing but continue to deter women from entering the sport. All right, and that's 50% of the world's population that we're turning off to cycling. All right, and that's ridiculous. Cycling should, you know what, I'm going to get a little hippy-dippy. Cycling is a little bit like a brotherhood or a family. If someone's out on a bike, do we look at them differently because they're a woman? We shouldn't, okay? There's really no reason we should. All right, I have ridden with plenty of women who are plenty strong. I know plenty of women who are fantastic athletes. They're triathletes, they're road racers, they're crit racers, whatever the case may be. They're great athletes. I've ridden with women in the men's fields who hang on and do not only just hang on to the field, but drive the field. All right, so the idea of saying that women are not as good as men is bullshit. And the idea that we're trying to make something out of nothing with this kit is, again, bullshit. The salacious appetite for scandalous stuff is ridiculous. Stop it. All right? Enough with it already. That's my bit on the nude Kitgate. I'm going to leave it at that, and I'm not going to say anything else about it. Well, other than the fact that it's worth pointing out that the race that this picture was taken at was the Giro della Toscana, which has, by the way, been bumped down in UCI level from last year, because last year, about three quarters of the peloton quit over safety concerns. The people were riding on open roads with just a police escort. So if you were not in the lead group with the police escort, you were riding through traffic lights, things like that. When complaints were made to the organizer, basically, they were told, if you don't like it, get out. So about 75% of the Peloton did, including people like Evie Stevens and Mariana Voss. So think about that. All right. This was the same race that brought you the "we don't give a shit about your safety" attitude. So enough said about that. I'd also like to take a little side juncture into the World Championships. And the World Championships, really a great race. What can I say? Michał Kwiatkowski won the men's road race in stunning fashion, coming in a second ahead, actually freewheeling in a second ahead of Simon Gerrans. He won the sprint for second against Alejandro Valverde, and behind by about 5 seconds was, who was it? Norwegian guy. Alexander Kristoff won the seventh place sprint from the field. The thing that annoyed me about this was Gerrans's interview in, I think it was in Cycling News, it could be. I don't remember exactly. I'll try to find the link and post it in the show notes. Was in Cycling News saying that, quote, "I wanted to cry at crossing the line second," end quote. I discussed this concept in a previous podcast, talking about when is racing really racing? And, you know, is there something about taking a race by the scruff of the neck and actually doing something instead of just sitting back and waiting for it to happen? And I want to address this to Simon Gerrans directly. Granted, I am not a pro racer. Granted, I don't have a huge list of palmares like Simon Gerrans does. But Simon, take a fucking pull already. All right, if you watch that race, and I did watch that race, by the way, it's not like I'm just commenting on what was written. I watched that race and I actually watched it again just to make sure what I was seeing. As that race is finishing up in the last couple of K with Michał Kwiatkowski about 5 seconds up the road, five or six seconds up the road, Philippe Gilbert is absolutely burying himself. And I do mean burying himself for Greg Van Avermaet. He starts to slow down a little bit, and he pulls across the road and flicks his elbow, hoping for someone else to come through. Now, in that group, you had Valverde, you had Gerrans, you had Greg Van Avermaet, you had Matty Breschel, I think it was Matty Breschel, and you had Philippe Gilbert. And of course, Michael Kwiatkowski off front. So, Greg Van Avermaet was obviously being pulled for the sprint by his teammate. And if you looked, he was also sitting on the very back of the group. All right? Of the remaining people who were there, Valverde, who has lost out in the worlds like 5-6 times now. He's got 6 bridesmaids dresses, but no wedding dress, so to speak. Gerrans, who really didn't do any work all day. Van Avermaet, who had been doing a little bit of work during the day. And Breschel, which I honestly don't know where the hell he came from. I'll be perfectly honest, I'm not sure where he came from out of the peloton, but be that as it may. Not a single one of them took a pull. Bear in mind that Gerrans crossed the line 1 second back of Michael Kwiatkowski, about 5 bike lengths. All right. And they had about 1.5K to pull back that 5 seconds. And they got 4 of it back in 1.5K. Simon Gerrans, I was crushed and crying because I didn't get, you know what? You had the choice. You could have pulled through and taken a 10-second pull. You could have attacked off the front if you were feeling so good. Now, he did claim either that or one of his interviews that he had really great legs. If you were feeling so good, why didn't you attack and make something happen instead of relying on Philippe Gilbert to pull them back? All right? You made a gamble and you lost because you didn't want to take the chance. Alejandro Valverde, same way. You wanted the win, but you weren't willing to make the sacrifice to try and win. You were going to let Gilbert just try and pull it back. All right, Van Avermaet, I can understand a little bit why he didn't take a pull, because he was being set up by Gilbert. He was being set up by his teammate. I understand why he did not. All right. Gerrans, Breschel, Valverde, you guys had nothing to lose. You had nothing to lose. Take the pull, make the attack, try and make somebody come over top of you. Try to make the bridge up. It's only 5 seconds. You were sitting in behind Gilbert and hoping that he would drag you up there and you'd be able to sprint for the win. Simon Gerrans has done this continuously. Just sit in, and just show his face just long enough to make something happen. All right, yes, it's a tactic of the sprinters. It's a tactic of the pure sprinters who really can't attack. Gerrans is better than that. All right, so honestly, to me, him sitting there and saying that he felt like crying, he was crying because he missed out on it by 1 second, you have nobody to thank but yourself. You have nobody to blame but yourself, Simon. Next time, actually, if you want to win, then try to win. All right, don't let somebody else try to win for you. All right, and again, I talked about that, I think, a year ago in one of my podcasts, and if I remember, I'll try to put that in the show notes, but either way. After a couple of long-winded rants, I'm going to get into the topic of today's actual podcast, which is the lost art of the group ride. Okay, so any of you who have been listening regularly to the podcast, any of you that are still listening to the podcast after those last two little ranting sidebars, will know that I have not spent a whole lot of time doing group rides this year. Those of you who follow me on Twitter, things like that, will realize I have not done a lot of group rides this year, especially if you follow me on Strava. I have been particularly enthralled with racing this year and basically training for that, at least until the training fell out the window after my vacation in July, in the end of July. Interestingly enough, this is kind of the time of year when I start reflecting a little bit, and having not been on a group ride in a while, and I've had some thoughts about what the perfect group ride would be. The falling leaves in the fall, Il Lombardia coming up very shortly here, the race of the falling leaves, and just in general the nice cozy fall weather and the stops for coffee and things like that while you're out riding, the lack of any directed training at this point made me think a little bit about the lost art of the group ride. I've been on a lot of group rides. Some have been great. A lot of them have not. And I'm just going to wax poetic a little bit about the things that you should have learned on the group ride, on the perfect group ride. All right. And there's a 14 item long list here that I've got. So I'm going to run through that and we'll discuss them a little bit at a time. One of the lost arts of the group ride, one of the things that I hope you will have learned, is the ability to ride for a couple months each year in a small ring. The ability to take the time out so that you can refine and hone and build your neuromuscular skills, your leg speed skills. You take the time to not worry about the average speed. You take the time to really focus on the souplesse, or the smooth pedal stroke, the thing that makes riding a bike art in motion. All right, go out, go to your computer. You're probably sitting at your computer right now. Go to your computer, go to your phone, look up Marco Pantani on YouTube. Yeah. We know the drug scandals, we know all that kind of stuff. Watch him as a rider. Watch the beautiful pedal stroke. Watch as he climbs, basically like an angel, never labored, always turning that perfect huge circle. The result of months and months and years of perfecting that pedal stroke, of riding in that small ring, just like you should be doing. All right. We're forgetting training modes here for a little while. We're forgetting all kinds of things here for a little while. We're talking about what it takes to make you the perfect group rider. All right. The thing that will make a group ride a beautiful, flowing, poetic, photo worthy. All right. Eurosport coverage worthy event. All right. And how you and all your friends can do that kind of thing. All right. Spend months each year in the big ring. I hope you've learned that. Number two, I hope you've learned to take your cycling shorts off, take your bibs off right after a ride. All right, there's nothing grosser than sitting around in a, quote, clammy chamois. It's nasty. It's not good for your ass. It'll give you a monkey butt. It'll give you saddle sores. It'll give you all kinds of nasty stuff. Plus, nobody wants to sit around in their cycling shorts after a ride. It's sweaty, it's damp, it's cold, it's kind of gross. Even if you're sitting around a coffee shop, all right? If your ride is done, your bike is packed, your wheel is in the car, the bike is on the roof, the wheel's in the car, your helmet is in your gear bag, your water bottles are empty and laying on the back floor, the back seat floorboards of your vehicle. Take the damn shorts off. You're not impressing anybody in the coffee shop by sitting around in them, showing off your legs, hairy as though they may be. All right? You're not. You're just making us all look at you and go, ugh. I want to sit next to that guy. A, he might smell, and B, he's probably got crotch rot. Take your damn shorts off immediately after the ride. All right? I hope you've learned that. Number three. It's an important one. And I hope you remember this one. I hope you've learned, all of those of you out there, to have started, or to start, if you're not started yet. If you're listening to this and you're not a real serious cyclist and you're looking for information, pay real close attention. I hope you've learned that you need to start yourself on a very humble bike. All right? Preferably a used bike. That would be even better. All right? Pay homage to the sport. Pay homage to those who came before you. All right? Don't show up at a local group ride wearing Adidas running shorts and a t-shirt, but straddling a $12,000 Colnago C60 with campy electronic 11-speed. Don't do it. If you're not going to wear the proper bibs and jersey or the proper kit, even if it is shorts, I guess I'll qualify that as proper kit. Should always be wearing bibs. But even if it is shorts, if you're not going to wear the proper kit, you sure as hell shouldn't be riding on an expensive bike. Even if you're wearing the proper kit and you're new to the scene, be smart. You don't need a $10,000 bike. Buy a $1,500 bike. Buy a $2,000 bike. Put the rest into your savings account. Let it build up. When you discover the beauty that is this silly sport called cycling, the camaraderie of racing and riding next to people who are like-minded and generally friendly, good people, that's when you go out. That's when you go to your local bike shop and go, bro, I'm fucking hooked on this, man. I need it. You need your fix. That's when you go out and buy the expensive bike. So I hope you've learned that. I hope you've learned not to shun the guy who shows up on that humble bike, because he just might kick your ass on that humble bike that may have been used by four or five people before him. I hope you learned that. Number four, I'm hoping you're remembering number one, because number four has to do with number one. I hope you've learned to pull the front of that group without surging. I hope you've learned to pull through cleanly. Just raise your cadence a tick, all right? And either raise the mile per hour a hair or keep it the same. don't suddenly see an open road in front of you and the guy pulls off, and just drop the hammer. All right? I'm guilty of doing that on some group rides, I will admit. But those group rides are usually team rides. Those are rides where, basically, you're out to prove your dominance. You're out to throttle the people behind you. It's not the, quote, perfect group ride. It's a training ride. You're out there to get something out of it. And if that means you ramp the pace up, or, you know, not surging, but you're ramping the pace up. You get on the front and you slowly tick it up from 18 to 18 and a half to 19 to 19 and a half to 20. By the time you pull off, you're doing 21, 22 miles an hour. Okay. If you're out for that perfect group ride, that perfect Sunday ride with that perfect group of people, for the love of God, don't surge. Display that souplesse. Let that perfect pedal stroke just float through while you pull through and you maintain the same tempo. Or just a hair more. Maybe just a hair more. Make the guys behind you think a little bit. I hope you learned that. Along the lines of not surging, number 5. I hope you've learned to run a rotating pace line. And along with learning to run a rotating pace line, you've learned to flick others through that pace line when you're ready to rock. Actually, when you're ready for them to rock. Remember the concept of a rotating pace line, that it's constantly rotating. Or everybody takes a short pull. It depends on how you want to do it. You could even have people taking 30-second pulls. But remember to keep that pace line rotating. And each person, when they pull off, you pull off towards the road. Don't pull off to the inside. As you pull off towards the road, all right, whether it be the left or right, flick the inside elbow and signal the next person in line to come through. Hopefully they're listening and they adhere to rule number 4, where they're going to pull without surging. All right, run that rotating pace line. Slide just one bike width, one handlebar width to the roadside, towards the road, of course. Slide one handlebar width and just drop your cadence a little bit. Drop your pressure on the pedals. Let the entire group just drift past you. And as you look behind you to make sure that the back of the group is coming up, you again call upon those months and months of riding in the small ring. You display that wickedly smooth, beautiful pedal stroke. And you just simply rev it up a little bit to almost match the speed of the group. And when that last wheel goes by you, you're already moving over so that you can jump into the draft of that last person. Because the next guy in line is going to do the same thing. All right, and they're going to do the same thing, the next guy in front of him, the guy in front of him, the guy in front of him. And suddenly you're going to be back again and again. Rule number 4, pull off with, remember to pull without surging, and then hit rule number 5, flick the other guy through. I hope you learned that. Rule number 6, I hope you've learned during that group ride, that perfect group ride, about the importance of the echelon. With a left three-quarter headwind, maybe you've learned to slide, even if it's just a couple inches, to the right of the wheel in front of you. And I hope the guy behind you has learned to slide to the right of your wheel. Not overlapping wheels, of course. You're too good for that because you spent months riding in the small ring, refining that pedal stroke. You're not surging when you pull off. So I hope you've learned to use that echelon to find the draft. Even if it's multiple echelons, I hope you've learned to use multiple echelons. All right? I hope you've learned to rotate through the echelons. To basically pull off and drift around the back of the echelon so that you can actually get back into the echelon without being forced into the gutter. I hope you've learned that too. All right, the first 6 are down. There's six more to come. Those first six are actually really pretty important when you're talking about group rides. I'll be honest with you. If you're ignoring those first six options or those first six rules in this lost art that is the perfect group ride, you're looking at a dangerous, dangerous proposition. I've been on plenty of group rides where people don't bother. They don't bother to ride in the small ring. All right? They've got too much bike for them to handle, or they don't even use how to. They don't even know how to use the bike they have. I don't care if it's a used bike. Maybe they don't even know how to use the bike they have. All right? They try to run a rotating pace line, and it ends up being a complete disaster. A dangerous disaster with people overlapping wheels, people trying to pull into the pace line in the middle of the line. Don't be that guy. I hope you learned something through that. Moving on to number seven. I hope you've learned in your infinite group ride times to ride through the top of a climb. And this is a huge pet peeve of mine, guys. Just as a side note, this is a huge pet peeve of mine. The guys who, and I'm going to point the finger at you, pure sprinters, all right? I'm going to point the finger at you, big boys. Those of you who get to the top of a climb and you fucking soft pedal. That's not riding through the top of a climb. That's no way to keep the group together. That's no way to keep impetus in the group. When you hit the top of that climb, you keep pedaling, damn it. If you have to shift to a gear lighter and crank up the spin rate, you do that. If you want to shift to a gear harder and push, you do that. I don't really care. But for the love of God, don't just stop. Nothing will stack up a group behind you like that. I'd rather you ride off the front. I'd rather you surge off the front than to come to a screeching halt at the top of the climb. That drives me up a wall. Just absolutely up a wall. So I hope you've learned that. And if you haven't learned it, for the love of God, please go out and learn it. Go out on your own. Go out and ride some climbs and try rolling over a hill. Head on over to my website, tailwind-coaching.com. Head on over there and find the HIT, the High Intensity Trainer Session, Climbing Power Rollover, so that you can learn how to roll over the top of a climb. All right? I hope you learn that. Number eight. I think this is number eight. Yeah, it's number eight. I hope you've learned to hold your line in a corner. For that matter, I hope you've learned to corner properly, period. To not break in the middle of a corner. All right? Nothing is more dangerous than somebody who dive bombs a corner, especially in a pace line, especially in a group ride where there's other people around them, where you may take out a front wheel, you may force somebody to brake check, or you may force somebody to take evasive action that could result in injury to themselves, yourself, or somebody else on the ride. Whatever the guy in front of you does, unless it's an absolute moronic line through a corner, unless it's an absolutely dangerous line through a corner, hold your line in the corner. Don't do anything twitchy in the corner. I don't care if there's gravel, ride through it. I don't care if there's a pothole, ride through it. Unless it's guaranteed to crash you out, hold your line in a corner. For the sake of others, for safety's sake, I hope you learned that. Number nine, another important one. Those of you who learn to pull without surging, I'm going to ask you to learn one more thing. I'm going to ask you climbers. I'm going to single out the climbers now. Actually, I'm going to single out a lot of people who stand up when they climb. I hope you've learned to stand up smoothly. And not, quote, throw your bike backwards, end quote. What do I mean by that? Most people, when they stand up, they shift a gear harder. When they shift that gear harder, they stop pedaling for a quarter of a pedal stroke. Their momentum temporarily, very, very short period of time, stops. And when they stand up, it has the impression of the bike shooting backwards. What you should be doing is planning your shift a little bit ahead of time. a few pedal strokes ahead. As your power leg, say your right leg is your power leg, as your right leg is coming through the 10 to 11 o'clock portion of the pedal stroke, you're clicking that shifter, you're dropping into a little bit of a harder gear, and as you first go to stand up, you're putting extra pressure through that right leg to propel that bike forward and counteract that, quote, kick back or throw back, end quote, in that situation. There's nothing worse than climbing behind somebody and suddenly realizing that their wheel is coming right back at you. I can tell you that's not a heartwarming feeling. It's not something I like to have to deal with when I see a wheel coming right back at me when I'm seeing somebody stand up in front of me. I know lots of people don't like that. Lots of people are bothered by that. I've seen crashes happen because of that. So I hope you've learned that, to stand up smoothly, not throw your bike back into the guy behind you. Number 10. While I hope you've learned to stand up smoothly and not throw that bike backwards, I hope you've also learned to give the guy in front of you a little bit of space while you're climbing. All right? Because a lot of times they're going to need to stand up, and they really don't want their front wheel. They really don't want your front wheel up their ass. So I really hope you give them a little bit of room on that climb. Hopefully you haven't learned the hard way by crashing out or, you know, rubbing wheels or, God forbid, tangling up spokes in their rear derailleur or something like that. But I hope you've learned that a little bit of space is not necessarily a bad thing. Unless it's a really, really shallow climb, there's no reason to try and be getting a draft off somebody. You can ride a few inches behind without a problem. You're not going to gain or lose any kind of advantage in that situation. So I hope you've learned to give a little bit of space so that when that guy accidentally throws his bike back at you, you actually have a little bit of room for error. That's something I really hope you learn. Number 11, for safety's sake, I really, really hope that you've learned to respect the yellow line rule. All right? Triathletes, I'm looking at you. I'm really looking at you. I've ridden with so many triathletes. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. One thing I found in common with a lot of them, and I apologize to any triathletes out there who don't do this, but I've got to single you guys out because you're the most blatant offenders of it. That and casual club riders are guilty of this too. They don't respect the yellow line rule. Folks, if this was a race and you disobeyed the yellow line rule, you get one warning before they disqualify you from the race. All right? The yellow line is there for your own safety. Don't cross it. Don't be an idiot. All right? If you've got a clear line of sight, and there's nothing coming, there's no reason you can't ride on this, on our side of the road. All right? We fought for bicycle advocacy. We as a group of cyclists have fought for advocacy and for respect on the roads from drivers, from motorcyclists, from pedestrians on the road. Every time you cross the yellow line, even if somebody doesn't see it, it makes us look bad. Because it becomes a habit. And then that habit's repeated while people do see us. So I hope you learn to respect the yellow line rule. And I hope you haven't had to learn that the hard way. Number 12. I really, really hope you've learned to point out significant, and I do mean significant, road hazards. For the safety of yourself and the people behind you, I hope you've learned to call out glass, which could flatten tires and possibly cause a crash, not the least of which cause people to be delayed and have the group cohesion die as we stop to change flats. Or for those of us who ride tubulars, be stuck in the middle of nowhere with no way to get home except for a cell phone. I hope you've learned to point out giant potholes which may eat a wheel. I've had one occasion at least where people have ignored potholes and I've hit them. One of those occasions cost me a Zip 202 rim. It's a pet peeve of mine. I hope you've learned to point out large sticks or large bits of debris in the road. I've got a scar on my chin from one time when somebody didn't point out the debris in the road and instead decided to run over it, which resulted in that being kicked backwards into my wheel and throwing me over the bars onto my face. It's a pet peeve of mine. It also resulted in some strange looks at work, but that's beside the point. I hope you've learned that. I hope you haven't learned the hard way like I have that pointing out road hazards is important. Now, I'm not saying go crazy. I'm not saying you got to point out every little twig, every little pebble, every little pothole, every little bit of rough road. But if you got a significant problem, enough that it makes you take notice, point it out to the people behind you so that they don't have the same problem that you do. They don't potentially find themselves in a injurious situation. I hope you've learned that, not the hard way. Number 13. I hope you've learned to lay off the brakes, especially in the pace line. And when you're on the brakes, I hope you've learned to use them judiciously, to feather them, not to grab them. I hope you've learned not to skid stop or panic stop without a really freaking good cause. I hope you've learned that. I hope you've learned that braking in a pace line is the kiss of death to the people behind you. You've just put them at huge disadvantage by opening a hole or a gap in front of you. I hope you've learned that panic braking in a pace line is a recipe for destruction, both of bikes and bodies. Again, I know of at least one episode where somebody panic brakes in a pace line. The resultant carnage was a couple of broken bikes, at least one fractured clavicle or collarbone, whichever you want to call it, and at least one fractured femur or hip bone. I hope you've learned that brakes can be almost more dangerous in a pace line, or in a peloton for that matter, than they are helpful if you don't know how to use them. I hope your brakes are in good condition. I hope you've learned to keep them in good condition with good pads and pads that are appropriate for the type of rims you're using so that grabbing a little bit of brake does not result in a panic stop. I hope you've learned to swerve away from danger instead of immediately grabbing the brakes in panic because it's a safer option. Usually. I hope you've learned that. Lastly, probably most importantly, well, I take that back. Everything we've talked about here is important. But this one's a mantra that's worth repeating every time. I hope you've learned to follow the wheel in front of you. And to not overlap wheels. I don't care how good you think you are. All it takes, if you're overlapping wheels, is a couple inches to one side or another, and you're on the ground. And God forbid you're not the last person in that pace line or in that peloton. There's other people who are going to be on the ground with you. That's pretty important. In fact, that's really important. Following the wheel is going to save you energy. Following the wheel is going to make you part of the group. And I hear you asking, well, what about an echelon? In that case, you can't follow the wheel in front of you. Wrong. You can follow the wheel in front of you. In that case, you're following the draft in front of you. And let me tell you, the draft in front of you is not overlapping wheels. It does not count for overlapping wheels. The draft will not have you overlapping wheels. If you're overlapping wheels in an echelon, you're doing something wrong. I really, really hope you've learned that. Overlapping wheels is how you get, quote, a wheel taken out, end quote. Or how you bust up a wheel on a derailleur. There's a video out there somewhere on YouTube. If I can find it, I'll link it here in the show notes. There's a video out there of a guy, a couple of triathletes. One of them's in the aero bars, and he's overlapping wheels. And I don't remember exactly, but one of them moves into the rear derailleur. One of them moves to one side, and it wasn't the rear derailleur, actually, it was the skewer. One of them moves to the side, and the front wheel, which is a radial-laced, low spoke count wheel, hits the skewer lever in front of him, and it breaks a couple of spokes, and the guy goes off the road and over the bars, and he's got a helmet cam on, so it's a pretty interesting watch. Luckily, he wasn't hurt too badly, but I'll bet he learned really quick, don't allow the wheels to overlap. Those 14 things are things that I hope you've learned in the case of the lost art of the group ride. I hope they're things that you'll take with you to your next group ride. And I hope they're things you'll work on at your next group ride. And I'll tell you what, a lot of those things that I just talked about, a lot of those 14 things, a lot of those are safety issues, and I hope they're covered in the safety briefing or the safety literature for your club or your team or your group ride instruction. Because if they're not, you're doing a huge disservice by forgetting about the things that make a group ride an artful execution as opposed to just a free-for-all. So think about those things. Think about the importance of those things. If you disagree with any of them, leave me a message on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. Leave me a message on the website, on the show notes receptacle for this particular podcast. I think this might actually be episode 50. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look. If it's episode 50, I can't believe it's 50 episodes. If it's not, we'll be getting to episode 50 really, really soon. I want to thank all of you, though, for listening. I'm going to treat it like it's episode 50. To hell with it. I want to thank all of you for listening to my ramblings for the past 50 episodes. And I want to thank all of you for supporting the hard work here that I put in at the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Your views, your clicks, your downloads, and your listens have shown that you guys love what I'm putting out there. The feedback I get is that you guys are loving what I'm putting out there. If you have ideas for the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, I'd love to hear them. Whether it's in the iTunes comments, the iTunes reviews, whether it's on the episode show notes, whether it's on my Twitter account, whether it's on the Facebook page. I'd love to hear your ideas for future podcasts. I'd also love to hear from some of you who might be interested in doing maybe a guest spot or a co-hosting spot on this podcast. There's a whole world out there of professional cycling, mountain biking, cyclocross, professional racing, road racing, women's racing, issues that deal with amateur racing and grand fondos and things like that. There's so many topics out there that lend themselves so well to a co-host. I'd love to hear from some of you about that. If you'd like to be a co-host, if you think it's a good or bad idea, let me know. Leave me some info at the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. Find me on Twitter and leave me a Twitter comment. Shoot me an email at coachrobdc@gmail.com. Hopefully we'll pull something together and I'll have a lot of material for another 50 episodes of podcast. Not that I don't have a lot of episodes stashed away and a lot of material stashed away, but hopefully I'll have enough. I'll have even more material for another 50 awesome episodes of podcast material. I want to thank all of you for listening for the last 50 episodes anyway. And thanks for listening to this one. I want you to ride safe. I want you to ride happy. I want you to learn from your group ride experiences. And I want you to try to recreate that lost art of the group ride the next time you go out with you and your buddies. I want you to imagine you're in the Tour de France and you're being filmed on Eurosport to millions and millions of people. Make it look good. Cycling's about looking good, as well as kicking ass. Ride safe, ride happy. Keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down. It's Coach Rob. Check out my stuff at tailwind-coaching.com for the links contained in this podcast. I'll talk to you real soon for another awesome 50 episodes, guys. See ya.